The Art of Leadership Network.
Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Hey, everyone. So glad you could join us again today on the Smart Family Podcast. I am your podcast co-host, Dr. Rob Meter. Now, before we start this special episode, you may have noticed that the podcast is part of the Art of Leadership Network. Now, that network includes the Carrie Newhoff Leadership Podcast, and Carrie has just launched the On the Rise email newsletter. Now, this newsletter is delivered every Friday and features some of the most fascinating and sometimes curious content about faith, culture, the future church, and other topics helpful for leaders. So if you'd like to start receiving On the Rise, visit ontherisenewsletter.com to sign up for free. And when you sign up, you'll get a sample newsletter right away so you can get a taste of what to expect every Friday. And of course, you can unsubscribe anytime as well. Again, that's ontherisenewsletter.com to get curated content about faith, culture, the future church, and more. Check it out. Okay, so what do we have for you today? Well, it's me, Dr. Rob Meter. A few months ago, I had the opportunity to talk about mental health at Connexus Community Church in Barrie, Ontario. As many of you know, I'm a pediatrician with a practice focused entirely on mental health and behavior in children, youth, and their families. And the church was doing a four-part series on mental health. And one Sunday morning, Jeff Brody, the lead pastor there and a good friend of mine, asked me to talk about children's mental health. And I was excited to do it. I immediately said yes, because I love talking about this topic. And it was really exciting to talk about how mental well-being has its roots in early childhood, how we have conversations about mental health with our kids, whether medications have a role, et cetera, et cetera. Plus, we tackle some great questions from the audience as well. Now, this message sparked some great conversations, and it was obvious that anyone who is involved with kids, whether it was parents, grandparents, youth leaders, aunts, uncles, they're thirsty for a deeper understanding of mental health in children and youth. And we all have a heart for raising our kids in a healthy and nurturing environment. And I know for a fact that every parent out there wants the best for their children. And so I was glad to talk about this topic that Sunday. So, and if that relates to you in any way, then this topic, this episode will be super useful. We pick up the conversation here after Jeff welcomes me on stage. Listen in.
We're excited about the conversation, Rob, and I know it's going to be helpful to a number of us. So talk to me today. When it comes to your practice, what are kind of the common kinds of mental health challenges that you see as you're working with your kids and your teens and teens over the course of your day-to-day?
Yeah, well, I mean, thanks, Jeff, for inviting me. I really love the opportunity to talk about mental health, and it's something that I talk about every day. But to talk about it in this setting, I think, is really important to me. So thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, privilege.
My day job is indeed, I'm a pediatrician, and I see kids with mental health and behavior problems throughout the lifespan from 0 to 18, I guess the kid's lifespan. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and it varies a bit from what age, you know, with what kind of things they might present with. So younger kids tend to come with issues like question of autism or other behaviors that might be disruptive, for example, in temper tantrums or oppositional type behavior that's posing a problem for the family. And in school kids, it's usually school-based problems, attention difficulties, focus difficulties, hyperactivity. And then in teenagers, we start to see more anxiety and mood-related disorders. And also what's related to that, things like substance use, self-harm, disordered eating. I noticed that I didn't say like blah, 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 disorder. You know, I typically try to stay away as much as possible from that and putting kids into diagnostic boxes while they're still developing. I know we still do use that terminology, and I use it kind of technically. I use that terminology, but, you know, we have to see kids' behavior in the context in which they're trying to adapt. And a lot of what we see as mental health challenges really is adaptive behavior in that child's context. And I think framing it that way helps us see mental health in a more balanced way.
That's great. Now, I hope we're gonna unpack that, I hope, a little bit more.
I hope so too,
this morning. But you deal with sort of infants all the way up kind of to teenagers, as you said. And often, I think for parents or for those of us who see teenagers in our life who are struggling with mental health, sometimes feels like, oh, it it only happens like they just, it's like something they caught, like the flu or something like that. But there's a whole development cycle when it comes to mental health with kids and all the way up to teenagers. So just talk to me a little bit about how those conditions kind of develop.
Yeah, it's true. Things don't tend to pop up just boom out of the blue somewhere. Sometimes they do when there's a really traumatic event or something that can overwhelm and challenge. But stuff that comes up in teenagers usually started way back. And in fact, I always like to go way, way, way back. And, you know, we can go back to even before the child is born. And in fact, even generations before the child is born, you know, trauma that affected, you know, grandparents and grandparents before that carries through the DNA and through the blood to become, you know, a formed child right from the very beginning. But I like to go even back before the child is born. You know, initially, there's that nervous system that develops. It actually starts as the spinal cord and then the lower, that explains why, you know, our body and our brain is so connected. We can't separate those two things. It happens right from when we're inside the womb. And then, of course, the lower brain forms and the midbrain, and then, you know, the more complex part of the brain where our language and our thinking skills come from. And usually that happens, you know, in a very controlled environment inside the mother's womb. But it is affected by stressors, and that can be things that, you know, substances, for example, we think of alcohol and other substances that can affect a baby's development that would impair its ability to cope with stress. Or just stress itself can be really hard because stress hormones are released, and that affects how the brain develops as well. And in fact, it tunes the brain to becoming more sensitive to stress. And it kind of puts the brain in a more hypersensitive, hypervigilant state. And then, of course, there's a transition from inside the mother's womb to outside. And that birth is an incredible transition, of course, because suddenly, you know, you kind of go from darkness and muffled sounds and just hearing mom's heartbeat to bright lights and smelling and tasting and seeing things. And we know that babies are wired to connect. And in fact, that's one of the biggest things that a baby will try to work its way through is establish a relationship with caregiver, usually the mother, and of course the father and siblings. And that relational context is just so important because what we want to happen there is a secure attachment to develop, because that's the foundation for relationships moving forward, and of course, highly related to mental health later on in life. So, and usually that relationship forms, and there's kind of stress that happens, but it's tolerable stress, right? So baby feels cold or hungry and cries and then makes its needs known, and mother's attuned to that and feeds the baby and or the dad and whoever else is around, and that happens in an organic way. There's sort of these mismatches and repairs, and that makes the baby grow and develop and able to cope with life stressors. But sometimes, of course, it's not always nice and rosy like that. There can be other additional challenges. And sometimes families find themselves in more challenging situations. We call those adverse childhood experiences. That's one thing that's been studied quite a bit. Adverse childhood experiences can really impact physical and mental health 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road. So there are those experiences in a context of trying to form a relationship, a secure attachment, and all those sort of stressors add up to become what we see as mental health issues or challenges later on in life. But that relational foundation is so key. And in fact, when they've done studies of adults in their 70s and 80s and 90s and asked them, you know, are you happy? What's your life like now? They found that the biggest link to happiness later on in life was warm relationships in early childhood. And so I'm just going to harp on the early years. This is the foundation where mental health starts. If you think of kind of like your iPhone, you know, you got your operating system. That happens in the first seconds, minutes, hours, months, days of life. And then everything else down the road is just adding apps, you know? So it's a kind of analogy I like to use because it's so foundational. It's so key to mental health later on in life.
That's great. And that's so helpful, those early years. Now, the teenage years are often what we hear about in the media. Teenagers are struggling on them when it comes to mental health. So talk to me a little bit about how does that kind of differ from when they're younger?
Yeah, so when you're younger, you develop coping strategies that are in keeping with your developmental stage, right? So when you're a baby, you kind of just cry to make your needs known, right? And as you get older, you start to use language. And as you're a teenager, you know, things become psychologically more complex and you're able to use different coping strategies. You also start to, what I would call, use escape strategies. So ways to escape stress that don't really deal with the stress, but give you temporary relief. Things like substance use, self-harm, gaming. I mean, those are all escapes from the stress of life. And that kind of help in the short term, but generally don't really help in the long term at all.
Right. And as adults, we probably face a very similar thing where there are all escapes that we can choose too, right?
Totally, yeah. This is not, like, nothing magic happens at age 18, you know. Maybe if we think it does, but, you know, but really these principles apply to adulthood as well.
Yeah. Okay. Now we've polled some parents and we got some of these questions from parents across Kinexus. So we said, let's get some parents to ask some of those questions. So we got a question from Stephanie, a mom. So we're going to put her on the screen.
Hi, Dr. Rob. Stress is a word that we use quite a bit. I'm wondering if you can touch on what stress looks like in our kids' lives and also how we would approach that.
Well, that's a great question because, you know, stress is a word that is kind of one of these catch-all words.
It's you hear it everywhere.
Stress, anxiety, trauma. We use all those words kind of almost interchangeably. And, you know, sometimes that's right. You know, they're just kind of synonymous. But you can talk about stress sort of in, like, what types of stress do we experience that help to form us and impact our mental health. So, for example, there's cognitive stress and biologic stress. There's social, pro-social, emotional stressors. All that impacts on how we get through our day. But then there's also the qualitative nature of that stress. And I like to think that stress is actually good. Stress is how we grow. Stress is how we develop. We need stress. I'm a procrastinator, so I make my own stress.
Right.
And that's how I get things done. But really, stress is how we need it to become resilient. Without stress, we would be kind of, you know, blah. So stress is good. And, you know, you think of school, for example, that's a good stress, right? Because we're learning and we're exposed to something new. It's stressful, but it develops us. Just like exercise, right? You go and work out, you stress your muscles, but you get stronger and you get more fit through it.
Yeah, it's a good kind of stress.
Yeah, yeah. I know you've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah, a lot of that. Actually, yeah, see, my stress is low because of how buff I am.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. Good stress, way to go.
Yeah.
But then besides positive stress, there's tolerable stress as well. Tolerable stress is like, that kind of sucks and I didn't have to go through that, but I can get through it, right? And there's things that we can teach our kids to help get through that tolerable stress. And that's just day-to-day life. But what we really want to protect our kids from is what we call toxic stress. Toxic stress are those things in our lives that really can hurt us and harm us in the long term. And toxic stressors, like those adverse childhood experiences like I talked about, which is things like physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, being exposed to bullying or racism, you know, that those kind of constant chronic things in our lives that can just drag us down and, of course, affect us in a huge way. Those are things that can impact our mental health and we want to really protect our kids from as much as possible.
And you talk sort of about the good stress, then you've got the tolerable stress. What are some tools we can give our kids to help them tolerate stress a little bit?
Yeah, great. Yeah, and this is stuff you might learn from a therapist, but you can also learn from, you know, yourself, right? And as we can teach our kids these things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're feeling stressed, there's some things you can do. You can do some deep breathing. Deep breathing is a great way to calm your body down because your body feels the stress, right? You know, your body tells you that you're feeling stressed. You feel that tension. You feel that, that stress inside your body. So calming yourself down with just some deep breathing. I do this multiple times a day. In fact, I did it just now when that little lead up came for the video, you know, when it says like, relax, breathe. Yeah. I can't help but do it when that guy says it on the screen.
Right. We can get you a copy of that video.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be good. Yes. I'll be watching it about 4 or 5 times a day. But, you know, that's just one really practical way, mindfulness, practicing gratitude. But even just like singing or listening to music, you know, that's a great way to let out stress. Talking to your friends. Those are healthy ways to cope with stress in your life so that you can go on and with the rest of your day.
Okay. Now, one of the questions I've gotten often throughout this series is around medication, because we know that medication can be helpful when it comes to mental health sometimes. So if you're a parent and you wonder, hey, would medication be helpful to my child? Like, what kind of approach should somebody take when they go to kind of meet with a medical health professional about that?
Yeah, no, it's a good question because obviously as a doctor, like I'm able to prescribe medication and get asked that a lot because that's what I see kids for when they're having challenges, like would medication help? And I would say, yeah, and for certain situations and certain conditions, they're sensitive to responding to medication. But really, you got to put it into context. Most of the time, it's just part of the picture. In fact, sometimes a very small part of the picture. The evidence for medication in many conditions, there's not a ton of evidence actually for it in kids. But it does help in certain situations in some kids, especially in more severe situations. But, you know, all that to say, let's put it into context. You know, all you're really doing is fiddling around with neurotransmitters in the brain, right? Norepinephrine or dopamine or serotonin. And yeah, that plays a part in how you're able to cope psychologically, but that's just a small part. I think we need to take the child into context. And so rather, like I said earlier about diagnosing a child, it's almost better to diagnose the situation that the child finds themselves in and are trying to cope. So yeah, sometimes fiddling around with some of those neurotransmitters makes a lot of sense and is helpful. But you know, like one analogy I like to use is like your brain is like this big pot of soup. You know, you got all these ingredients and you're chopping up the vegetables and you're adding the spices and you got your broth. And really medication is maybe just adding like a bit extra salt to the mixture, right? It might help a little bit, but in the big picture, there's lots of other ingredients there. And so when you're treating behavior, which is what medications tend to do, you got to think of like, that's the tip of the iceberg. That's really what we see and what's challenging us as parents and maybe for the child themselves as well. But really, if you just address the tip of the iceberg, you got to look at what's underneath the surface, what's driving that behavior. Because all behavior is communication. All behavior tells us that there's something going on that we need to address. So yes, you can kind of put a band-aid on the behavior and medication might be part of that because it might allow the child to respond better to other forms of therapy. But you got to look at what's underneath the surface as well. Super important. In fact, you can't rely on just medication.
Yeah, it's almost like whenever I talk to you about this, I always feel like the encouragement is I need to be like an investigator. Like I'm like a private investigator on my kids, trying to figure out like
what. Don't stalk your kids.
Yeah, no, yeah, don't. Yeah, not stalking your kids in a good way. In a good way, but figuring out, hey, like what's going on? Where is this coming from? Trying to kind of assess the context of where is it coming from, what's driving it to the surface. In some ways, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, no, it's true. Like whenever you see behavior in a child that's challenging, ask yourself why and why now? Mm-hmm. Those two questions I think are really key for parents to figure out and to help the child figure out. Like, where is this coming from? What's the reason behind it? And that ultimately is going to help improve their mental health.
Right. I've heard you say before that the pills don't necessarily teach the skills that somebody needs, right?
Exactly. They might help you, you know, access the therapy and stuff, but really ultimately we still have to teach social competence and other competencies to help get through life.
Yeah. Okay, great. Emily, who's a mom, we've got a question from her. We'll put that up.
How do you advise parents start a conversation around mental health with their kids?
Okay, great. Well, I think I'm going to be a bit tongue-in-cheek here. It's like, don't have a conversation about mental health with your kids, okay? Because it should be part of your everyday conversation.
Right.
It's like, you know, when you get ready to have the sex talk with your kids and you're kind of reading the book, like what terms do I use? How do I approach it? What time of day should I do it? Like, okay. So if you set your kids down and says, hey, we're going to have the mental health talk, they'd be like, oh, cringy dad, don't go there.
Yeah.
Right? So I think the way I say it is like, don't have conversations about mental health. Conversation is mental health.
Ooh, that's good.
All right. And so conversation is communication. And what we said earlier, behavior is communication. So really everything you see in your kids in your day-to-day interaction is having a conversation with your kids about mental health. And so when that does happen, look at what's, become a student of your child, right? And figure out like, what's the behavior talking about? What are they saying to me? What are they communicating to me? You know, one of my kids had this condition called, we called it local legs, right? She'd be like, kind of all dancing, like kind of like Lord of the Dance, you know, all squirmy and her legs were moving 100 miles an hour.
When she was young.
Well, yeah. She doesn't do it now anymore. Well, maybe she still does a little bit. But, you know, but if there was a big smile on her face, I knew that that behavior meant that she was excited about something, wanted to share with me something, and she almost couldn't contain herself. But if it's like linked with like, you know, furrowed brow and she's all kind of agitated and hyperactive that way, I know that it means something else, right? So that behavior means something. But when I guess what I'm trying to say is listen to the behavior. And then as they get older and they start talking more and you've set the stage for good conversations, listen to everything that they're telling you. Listen, listen, listen. Listen is the most important thing that we can do, mm-hmm. right? Because you'd be surprised what comes out, especially when they're in high school. And you're like, hmm, interesting. Okay. You know, and the more you listen, you realize, I did not know that that kind of stuff happened in high school, but now I do.
Right? Right. And just stay calm. Just stay calm.
Smile and nod.
Yeah. Now, when you have those conversations, so your child shares something with you, just like you're saying.
Yeah.
As a parent, give me some tips on how to respond to something like that.
Well, so first of all, if your kids are sharing about how they're feeling, just validate those feelings. Don't criticize or dismiss or ignore it. I mean, emotional awareness and recognizing emotions for your kids, I think, is something that we as parents should validate. And that is so affirming for them and sets the stage for further sharing. You know, it's important to mirror back to them. When they are feeling stressed about something, don't just sit there kind of like deadpan, like, all right. No, like, just like, ugh, I know, I feel that and I understand and that must bother you. You know, don't try to provide answers right away and there in the moment. Just listen and be there for them. I think that's the best way to keep the conversation going and keep the relationship alive.
Yeah, and I can kind of get destination oriented.
I'm like totally solutions focused dad, right. You know? It's like my wife is really good at understanding the emotional context.
Right.
And so I guess we both have our roles.
Yeah.
And I have a lot to learn.
I think we all do. Well, Rob, I really appreciate you being here because you can imagine what it's like when somebody says to you, hey, can you say everything there is to know about mental health in kids and you have 30 minutes?
So I was talking so fast. Yeah. I was trying to like
get it all in.
Pack it all in.
That's right. But listen, I think, you know, even for me, for many of us here and Aurelia online, you hear some of this and some of you can go, oh man, like I wish I had a do-over or I would have done some things differently. Or I realized today, like I'm feeling like, ooh, I'm just overwhelmed with my kid. And this just actually makes me feel maybe even worse on the other side.
Yeah.
And so I would love for you to just speak to anybody who's in that boat today.
Yeah, no, thanks for bringing that up, Jeff, because I was thinking too, especially focusing on those early years and how foundational those are and how the relationship between, you know, the parents and the child in those early years is so impactful for mental health later on. It's easy to kind of walk away from a service like this and going like, oh shoot, I messed up. Yeah. What did I do wrong? But that's not the case. We know that every parent loves their kids. Every parent sets out to be the best parent that they can. You know, we have this concept with kids where we say kids will do well if they can. You know, if they have the skills, generally they will do well. They will choose the right options. But parents will do well if they can as well. And if we can support parents and support families, because so many times adversity isn't chosen by parents, it's thrust upon them. And we do the best that we can in that situation. Mm-hmm. Just like kids too, you know, we see their behaviors. That's usually because adverse situations and instances have been kind of brought into their day-to-day life. And that's what results in some of the mental health challenges that we see. So don't blame yourself. You know, we are where we are. Life is stressful. Stuff happens. But how can we move from our current place to a better place? I think that's what we need to focus on.
Right. Now, can we thank Rob for being here today?
Well, thank you for listening in on that conversation with Jeff and I. I hope you found that helpful as you reflect on your own family situation, whether your kids are young or out of the house, or maybe you're a grandparent or a foster parent or an aunt or an uncle or a teacher, and you have an opportunity to be a positive influence on a child. Remember that the early years are foundational. That is when the brain is most dynamic and most susceptible to learn and grow. In the case of positive stress, that's good. But in the case of toxic stress, not so much. And that is what we want to avoid. Our brains really are incredible organs and they make us who we are. And every child has an opportunity to grow into an amazing human being. That potential lies within each and every child. And a stable and secure nurturing relationship is the soil in which that potential best develops. Well, this was just a segment of my conversation with Jeff. If you want to see and hear the whole thing, check out Kinexus Community Church on YouTube and scroll back to earlier this year and to see this message and the others in the series as well. It was really, really interesting. And Jeff did an amazing job with that series. Thanks again for joining us today on the Smart Family Podcast. Twice a month, we connect with thousands of you around the world to bring you topics that help you learn more about parenting, marriage, mental health, child development, etc. We hope you enjoyed today's episode as well. And if you did, will you tell someone about it? Better yet, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Just scroll down to rating and reviews and tap on the stars to leave us a rating or leave us a comment there. We would love to get to 50 ratings by the end of the year. Please help us out in that. Okay, so that's it for today. Thanks so much for joining me, Dr. Rob Meter. Tune in next time as Tony and I approach episode number 100. And we talk on another fascinating family topic. And why do we do this? Because we want to help you love being home.